It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
It's time once again for our weekly infusion of old-time radio. Today we'll start off with the Lux Radio Theater, so it's going to be drama, full hour of it. From 1944, November 6th, 1944, this is called The Pied Piper.
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you The Pied Piper, starring Frank Morgan, Margaret O'Brien, and Senia Hasso. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. On the eve of a great national election, I believe there's one thing on which we all agree. That is, that the hope of the world tomorrow rests on the children of today. It is they, the young people, who will make this tired old world a better place in which to live. Tonight's story, The Pied Piper, a hit picture from 20th Century Fox, tells how a handful of youngsters, trapped by the Nazi invasion of France in 1940, become attached to an amazing old gentleman who is allergic to children. That amazing old gentleman is played by Frank Morgan, who's making a new picture at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Hold High the Torch. And tonight he's supported by Sweden's distinguished actress, Signe Hasso. And one of the children whom he saves for posterity is 7-year-old Margaret O'Brien, who has recently completed her Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Technicolor picture, Meet Me in St. Louis. Young as she is, Margaret O'Brien is already a veteran of the Lux Radio Theater, having captured all our hearts last season in Lost Angel. I said then, and I repeat now, that I've been watching stars on stage and screen for half a century, and I've never seen a finer emotional actress. And speaking of children, I have in my hand a letter that I wish you could all see. It's written not only in pencil, but also in Braille, the international language of the blind. And it comes from a group of sight-troubled children at a school in Minnesota. These last two lines say, "Every Monday evening, we listen to your Lux Radio Theater and like it very much. We also use Lux toilet soap and think it is very good." I believe that's the first time that Lux toilet soap has ever been praised in Braille. And to those children, I send our warmest thanks and hope our Lux Radio Theater continues to bring them happiness. And now it's curtain time, and we're ready for the first act of The Pied Piper, starring Frank Morgan as Mr. Howard, Margaret O'Brien as Sheila, and Signe Hasso as Nicole. This is the story of an English gentleman named Mr. Howard, who became the father of 6 children, all in the course of a few days. This sounds a bit incredible, but it's even more incredible when you take into account the fact that Mr. Howard didn't even like children.
No. It's not that I dislike children. I assure you I've never disliked children. It's simply that they make me feel uncomfortable. Children are too bright. It was in the summer of 1940 that I first met little Sheila Cavanaugh and her brother Ronnie. We were staying at the same inn in France, a quiet little place at the foot of the Alps near Switzerland. I'd been fishing there for a few days. Rather fair luck, too. I remember I came back to the inn one evening with my catch. The children were reading in the lounge, and Madame Picard was, as always, standing in back of the little hotel desk.
Ah, Monsieur Howard, you have good luck today, eh?
Yes. 2 very fine trout, madame. 1 for me and 1 for you for supper.
Monsieur, what an accomplishment. 2 of them. Yes. Look, children, are they not beautiful?
My father caught 5 today.
Oh, did he? Probably fishing with worms.
Oh, no, sir. He was fishing with an artificial fly. Yesterday he caught 10.
Yeah, really, is that so?
Ah, but children, your father is such a young man. Monsieur Howard, you must be tired. Sit down, rest. I will take the fish to Emily in the kitchen.
Well, thank you, madame.
Mr. Howard.
What do you want?
I've just been doing my lessons. Will you help me, Mr. Howard?
help you? Young woman, is that regarded as ethical?
Sir? Oh, it's quite all right, Mr. Howard. Everyone helped Sheila.
Oh.
You see, I have to name 5 states in the United States. And the only one I can think of is Texas.
Texas, yeah. Well, now, let's see. Texas, and then there's California.
California.
And Virginia. Virginian cigarettes, you know.
Virginia?
Yes. And Rochester.
Rochester? Rochester's an estate, Mr. Howard.
Really? Then may I ask what it is?
Rochester's a city.
Oh, well, it may very well be a city, madam, but I don't deny that. I only contend that it is also a state. A state somewhat north and a bit to the northeast of the New England colony.
But it's not, Mr. Howard. It's just a city, and that's all. It's a city in the state of New York.
Did anyone ask you?
No, sir.
Then you'll be doing me a great favor by keeping your irresponsible conjectures to yourself.
Yes, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening, Daddy.
Evening, Mr. Howard.
Yeah, good evening.
Hello, Dad.
Hello, son. Anybody tried the wireless this evening? We ought to be able to get some English news if Berlin hasn't jammed it.
Daddy, is Rochester in the United States? A city or a state?
Rochester? Rochester's a city, of course. Why?
Mr. Cavanaugh, have you any corroboration for that reckless statement? Or is that simply your offhand opinion?
I'm afraid I don't understand, sir.
Mr. Howard told Sheila that Rochester is a state.
Well, I must admit I'd never heard the question raised before, but...
And what would you say, sir, if I informed you that I myself have visited the state of Rochester?
In that case, naturally, I'd be compelled to admit that you were right, sir.
Listen, Daddy. I hear planes. Listen.
Yes. Quite a few, I imagine.
They're German, Dad. They're Heinkels.
You can tell by the motors.
Ronald, those planes again.
Yes, dear.
They're German, Mother. I can tell.
I heard them going over this afternoon. Where could they have been, Ronald?
I don't know. I can't understand it.
The fighting is all up north in Belgium.
Yes. Unless things are worse than we've heard.
Is the wireless working? Is there any news, monsieur?
There ought to be. It's just about time.
Twice they passed today. Where are they going? Where?
Here we are. I've got it.
This is the overseas service of the British Broadcasting Company, London calling. It would be idle to deny that Britain today faces a dark hour. All channel ports, French as well as Belgium, are now under German occupation. We must prepare to face any eventuality, even invasion. In this hour of darkness, let Englishmen, wherever they may be, in whatever lands beyond the sea, hear again by transcription the words of the Prime Minister before the House of Commons this morning, and be of good heart.
We shall defend our island. Whatever the cost may be, we shall fight on the beaches, on the landing grounds, in the fields, in the streets, and on the hills. We shall never surrender. And even if, which I do not for one moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the sea, armed and guarded by the British fleet, will carry on the struggle until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, sets forth to the liberation and rescue of the old.
One moment, please.
Ronald, turn it off. Ronald.
It is worse than we thought.
Yes, but we are well out of it here, eh, Monsieur Howard? They will never fight this far south. We could hide out here for years, and for you and me at our age, Monsieur Howard. That is a very comforting thought.
Have you finished?
Yes, monsieur.
Then allow me to inform you, sir, that if ever again you address one word to me, I shall take the greatest of pleasure in thrashing you within an inch of your life, regardless of your age.
Monsieur.
Madame Picard, there's a train for Paris at 9 o'clock, isn't there?
Why, yes, monsieur.
I shall be taking it. Please arrange with the station master for my reservation to London by way of Paris and Saint-Malo.
But, monsieur, you have only been here 3 days.
3 days of which I am heartily ashamed. I'll pack my things at once.
Mr. Howard.
Yes?
I hope you're not being hasty because of anything this man has said. I can assure you that no one here believes for one second that you're here for, well, for any but the best of reasons.
No, I'm here because I'm a selfish and pig-headed old man. I offered my services to every department of the government in London. I'm not without experience, you understand. But I was not needed. I was too old. In all of London, I was taken seriously by but one man, my vicar. He suggested to me that I knit for the soldiers. I'm afraid that I took some exception to his well-meant suggestion, but to run away like a sulky child was wrong, and I'm deeply ashamed of myself.
That's not my point, sir. As you say yourself, you're not young, sir.
There is no other point. Young or old, an Englishman's place at a time like this is in England. And if the trains are running, I shall be there in 18 hours to knit. An hour later, I was in my room, still packing, when Mrs. Cavanaugh asked to see me. She seemed quite strained, nervous.
Mr. Howard, do you know what my husband does?
No, I can't say I do.
He is an official of the League of Nations for Geneva. And in Geneva, they think that Switzerland is very likely to be invaded next.
Do they really?
That's where we're going, tonight, back to Geneva.
But is that very wise, if there's danger there?
It happens to be his post of duty.
I see.
But if Hitler does come, there won't be much food. There never is under him. I'm thinking of the children.
Oh, yes?
Mr. Howard, would you take them with you back to England?
Do what? Would I do what?
It would only be to Plymouth. My sister would meet you there, and I know it's asking an awful lot, but...
Well, you mean that girl, too?
Oh, please, she didn't mean to be rude. Sheila's really a very good child, and she'll behave, I promise you.
Mrs. Cavanaugh,
please.
I... No, it's impossible. I'm sorry, but it's out of the question. Really, I couldn't. I simply couldn't. That night, I left for Paris with Sheila Cavanaugh and her brother, Ronnie.
Are we taking the train, Mr. Howard?
Of course we are.
Yes, we are.
And will we sleep on the train, will we?
I expect so, yes.
He won't.
What's that?
He won't sleep on the train.
What do you mean? Why won't he?
Because he always gets sick on the train. Sick right on the floor.
I don't either.
You do.
I don't.
No, Ronnie, of course you do.
I do not.
Now, please, let's not dispute the fact. Time will tell us who is correct, I'm afraid. The argument was settled an hour after we boarded the train. Ronnie was quite sick. With the kind aid of a French lady on the train, I took care of Ronnie as best I could. The French lady had a child of her own. She seemed to understand these things.
Are you comfortable, Mon Petit?
Oui, madame.
He speaks French, yes?
Madame, what seems to be the trouble with him?
He is sick, monsieur.
Yes, that I understand.
I told you he'd be sick.
Quiet, you, quiet.
It is brain sickness, monsieur. But besides, he has fever.
Fever?
Maybe he has eaten something. Maybe he has been too hot in a draught. That is the way it is with children.
Well, but does he need a doctor?
Oh, no. If he can rest a little while and keep warm, he will be all right soon.
I see. Well, Sheila, how are you?
Oh, very fit, sir. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Where is little Rose? Rose, viens ici. Si, ma soeur. Récitez pour le petit garçon. Monsieur, Rose will recite for your sick little boy. He'll enjoy it.
Well, thank you. How do you do, Rose?
Comment allez-vous, sir?
Alors, Rose, récitez.
Ma grand-tante mère ici, dans une maison, avec une fermier, avec une petite fille.
Mr. Howard, why are we stopping here?
I don't know, but I shall certainly find out.
Don't move. I'll be right back. Just a moment, my good man. I want to know when the next train leaves for Paris.
To Paris? There is no more trains to Paris, monsieur. No trains to the north at all.
But I hold tickets. I shall report you to the management.
Monsieur, do you not understand? The Germans have crossed the Marne. Maybe the trains will never run again.
Never? But I have two small children.
At your age, monsieur, that is undoubtedly magnificent. But if this is a contest, I have nine.
Now look here.
Mr. Howard, what is it?
Sheila, I told you to stay on the train.
Listen, there's a bus outside to Shot.
Shot? Why Shot?
There's a train there to San Nello. The chef de guerre just told me.
Well, then let's catch it. By all means, come along. Well, this was a bit of luck, all right. I must say, Sheila, this bus idea was very clever of you. Very clever indeed.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, I expect that if you could break yourself of a certain insufferable pig-headedness, you'd be almost bearable. Are you comfortable, Ronnie?
Yes, sir.
Comment allez-vous, monsieur?
Well, well, little Rose, so you caught the bus too, eh? Fine. And where's your mother, little Rose?
That wasn't her mother. That was her aunt.
Well, where's her aunt? Good heavens, did we leave her behind?
Well, yes, Mr. Howard.
What is this?
Donnie wheeled a puppy, eh?
What are you muttering to her?
I'm asking her for a piece of paper her aunt gave her. Voila. Here it is, Mr. Howard. There's something written on it.
Henri Tenoir, Dickens Hotel, Russell Square, London. I don't understand. Who is this Henri Tenoir?
That's Rose's father. He's a waiter.
But of what possible interest could his address be? Oh, so that's it. I'm to burden myself with another female child.
But, Mr. Howard, they haven't any house. The Germans burned it down, and they haven't anywhere to go at all. Don't you see?
Yeah. Come one, come all, eh, woman?
But you wouldn't want them caught by the Germans, would you?
That is not the point.
Well, don't cry, Rose. Look, pretty, Pa. Mr. Howard, I rather like her.
Don't you see? Rose can take care of Ronnie, and I can take care of her, so you'll have no bother.
Yeah, that's all very neatly arranged, eh? Well, perhaps I have something to say on the subject. I do not propose to become the Mecca of every unfortunate child in France.
No, sir.
When we get the shop, I shall turn her over to the authorities and leave it to them to get her back to her aunt.
Yes, sir.
It's the only intelligent way to deal with such situations.
Yes, sir. Ronnie, would you tell Rose what Mr. Howard is going to do?
All right. Rose.
Yeah, this is just a moment.
Yes, sir.
What was the name of that hotel?
The Dickens Hotel, sir.
I never heard of it in my life. But I imagine we'll be able to find it.
Oh, Mr. Howard.
Oh, thank you, sir.
We were about 40 miles from Chatte when the bus stopped to repair a tire. It was a lovely day. There was a stream just off the road where we sat down to have our lunch under the trees. And then the planes came. German planes. They dropped out of the sky, swarmed down toward the road and the bus. It didn't seem possible that they were trying to kill us.
Mr. Howard, they locked us.
Yes. Are we all right? Sheila, Rose?
Yes, sir.
I'm going back to the bus to see if I can get our bags. And children, while I'm gone, I want you to promise me, don't look up that way. You won't now, will you? Stay right here now.
Ronnie, I'm going to look. Don't, Ronnie, don't.
Sheila, look. There's dead people there. Dead people.
We were still there on the road when night came, and I herded the three children into a deserted old barn to sleep. But then I noticed that there were no longer three children, there were four. The fourth was a boy with a pale, thin face and the dull, glazed eyes of a child in terror. He couldn't seem to talk. He only repeated one phrase, over and over.
Ne'alima.
This child, is he with us now?
Yes, sir, we brought him in, sir. Ne'alima.
He can't talk, Mr. Howard. That's all he says. Ne'alima, the German.
Who is he?
His name is Pierre.
How did you learn that?
He told us.
But he can't talk.
No, sir. May we speak to you privately, sir?
Well, yes, of course.
He was in the bus. Didn't you see him?
The dead people, sir. They were his father and mother.
I see.
He can't speak, and I don't think he can hear either.
I see. Here, lad. Let me see you. Look up here.
Ne'alima?
Yes, my boy. We'll take care of you now. There's nothing to fear now, my boy.
Mr. Howard?
Yes, Sheila?
I can't go to sleep.
Oh, but you must try.
Yes.
Mr. Howard, I'm sorry I was rude the other night about Rochester.
Oh, it's quite all right. Doesn't matter in the least.
I was wrong, you know.
No, not at all. I may very well have been wrong myself. There's so many of those American states. Kansas, what's that Indian state?
Massachusetts,
that's it. Seemed very likely there might be another named Rochester. No reason why not, you know.
Oh, yes, sir. I remember it very well.
You do?
Oh, yes, indeed. A very important industrial state.
Well, now, I'm not such an old fuddy-duddy after all, eh?
I should say not.
My memory may have gone a bit ragged here and there, but when it comes to geography, you'll generally find I'm pretty good.
Oh, I can see that, sir.
Well, that's very decent of you to acknowledge it, too.
Thank you, sir.
Well, good night, my girl.
Good night, Mr. Howard. Rochester.
In a few minutes, Mr. DeMille and our stars will bring us Act Two of The Pied Piper. And now, there's quite a crowd outside of Drummond's Chinese Theater here in Hollywood. A preview of an important new picture has just ended. People are watching their favorite stars coming out of the theater.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
Oh, just look at that white dress with the sequins. Isn't it beautiful? Oh, there goes Barbara Stanwyck. And there's Claudette Colbert, and oh, my goodness, if that isn't Sonia Henney.
And later, on their way home...
Oh, aren't they the glamorous people, though? They must have to spend simply hours every day on beauty care.
Oh, they don't, though. Why, they're such busy people, they don't have time to fuss for hours. Why, Janie, just imagine. They use the same quick, easy care I do.
Why, what do you mean, Sue?
Why, Lux Toilet Soap. Active Lather Facial, the same kind screen stars take. The stars use Lux Soap in their studio dressing rooms. And they use it at home, too.
And that's a fact. 9 out of 10 famous screen stars use Lux Toilet Soap regularly. Lux Soap Beauty Care is the Hollywood way to a lovelier complexion. Recent tests prove that actually 3 out of 4 complexions became smoother and softer with this daily active lather care. It's true that screen stars haven't the time for elaborate daily complexion care, yet they can't take chances with complexion beauty, not for a minute. Here's what lovely young Teresa Wright says about it.
A Lux girl? Indeed I am. These beauty facials do wonders for my skin. Here's all I do. Cover my face generously with a rich Lux soap lather, work it in thoroughly. Then I rinse with warm water, splash on cold, and pat with a towel to dry. Makes my skin feel so soft and smooth.
Why not try this famous Hollywood complexion care? Get some Lux Toilet Soap tomorrow. Use it every day for the next few weeks. Then see if you're not delighted with the way the smooth, luxurious lather cares for your skin. Lux Soap facials every day help skin to be fresher, lovelier, more appealing. We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Act Two of The Pied Piper, starring Frank Morgan as Mr. Howard, Margaret O'Brien as Sheila, and Senior Hassel as Nicole. As the Pied Piper of old led his children to a happy land beyond the mountain, so our Piper, Mr. Howard, tried to lead his children beyond the sea, to security, to safety, to England.
It took us 3 days to reach Chat. I remembered then that I had a friend there, a young lady named Nicole Rougeron, whom I'd met on a vacation in St. Moritz. I decided I would appeal to her for help, but I had to warn the children to be careful. No excitement, please. We're in a very unpleasant situation. First, no more English, understand? If any of us has heard speaking English, well, we'd be really in for it. Now, you understand that, don't you?
Oh, yes, sir.
Sheila?
Monsieur.
That's it. Speak French.
Monsieur.
Well, not to me.
Oh, what are you going to do?
Well, I suggest we play a little game. I shall pretend to be very old and stone deaf. Can't hear a blasted word spoken to me, eh?
Oh, good. And a little crazy, too.
Crazy?
Just a little, please.
Well, that might not be bad at that. Mouth open sort of thing, you mean. Might be very good indeed. I might babble a bit, too, you know.
Oh, no, Mr. Howard.
Oh, no?
I think that might be a little too much.
Oh. Overdoing it, eh? I thought it was rather good.
Stop that now. This is a serious business. Very serious business. Come along now. We'll try to find my friend, Mademoiselle Nicole.
Monsieur Howard.
Oh, monsieur.
You remember me, mademoiselle?
But naturally, monsieur. Come in, please, quickly.
Well, I'm not alone.
Come in, and the little ones, too.
Oh, well, come in, children.
Yes,
Mama, you remember Monsieur Howard?
Monsieur Howard. Yes.
Madame, I am happy
If you speak English, close the door. Come inside. To speak English today is not safe. Not safe for any of us.
I know, madame, and I have no wish
No, please. We must be careful. That is all. Our friends are still our friends. Regardless.
Well, that's very kind of you, madame.
But, monsieur, the children, you did not have them last year.
Madame, some of them I did not have 24 hours ago. We're on our way to England. Allow me to introduce them. Madame Rougeron, Mademoiselle Nicole Rougeron, this is Sheila. That's a very fine girl. And this is her brother, Ronnie. This is Rose, this is Pierre, and this is... Who is this?
Who marked your name, about?
What? Where did you come from? I've never seen this one in my life. Sheila!
Yes, sir.
When did he join us?
Well, he's been with us off and on since yesterday.
I see.
You mean, monsieur, you don't know who he is?
No, but on this trip, that doesn't seem to be necessary. Boy, where did you spring from? Come on, speak up.
It's Bretagne, monsieur.
That is Dutch.
His name is Villain, not William. Villain.
Yes? How do you know that, Sheila?
He told us.
Listen to this, mademoiselle. Sheila, do you speak Dutch?
Oh, no, sir.
Do you understand Dutch?
No, sir.
But he told you?
Yes, sir.
Then in what language did he tell you?
In no language. He just told us.
Well, I suppose there must be some normal explanation for this system of communication. Very well, Willem. We'll do what we can for you.
Of course, of course. The poor little ones. I wonder if they would like something to eat.
Oh, of course they...
Yes, they understand that all right, too. I am occasionally seized with the conviction that I am convoying guinea pigs.
Monsieur Howard, you do understand that you are in great danger here?
Yes, I do. And I promise in just a few minutes when I've rested a bit, we'll be on our way. But I was hoping to see Colonel Rougeron also.
We have not heard from my father for several months. At that time, he was with his regiment before Metz.
Oh. You have my sympathy, mademoiselle. I understand. You see, I too have suffered a loss. You remember my son, John?
John? Yes, but...
Well, I regret to inform you that he was killed. He was in the RAF, you know, shot down 2 months ago. Gave a very decent account of himself, I understand, before they got him.
Then he's dead? Excuse me, please.
Mademoiselle Nicole was very kind. She helped us arrange for tickets on the train, and when we left Chartres, she even came along with us. May I ask now where we are bound?
To the Channel, monsieur, the Brittany coast. There is someone there I know who might help.
But was this necessary for you, this long, not very safe trip?
Even if someone else could have done it, Monsieur Howard, I would not permit it. It is a thing that I must do myself alone.
Mademoiselle, I appreciate this, even if I do not understand it.
It would be just a year ago, wouldn't it, at Mount St. Amaurice? But a long, long year, and a sad one.
Yes, it's all quite hard to realize. Every now and then I feel it's all a dream, and presently we'll all wake up. And perhaps John will walk in and we'll sit down and talk together again.
I know.
It took 3 to bring him down, you know. You remember him kindly, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. His letters and our last, our only visit together in Paris.
You saw him in Paris?
Once. Just once for 3 days. It was just before the invasion. Oh, we We had a beautiful 3 days together.
But I had no idea of that.
No. We told nobody. In time we would have, I suppose. We planned to anyway. Then he went back. And I waited to hear from him. You know, it's funny. You wait and wait. Day after day. You wait for a letter. And then it comes. But it isn't from him. It's from his squadron. So for a long time you don't open it. You just sit there and hold it, wishing you need never open it. Because you know that a letter from his squadron, from a friend, can have but one thing to tell. And then at last, you do open it.
My dear child.
And after that, your whole world is darker than it was before.
Nicole's loss had been as great as mine, and I understood then why she had come with us. We went to a little town near the channel to the home of Nicole's uncle. With the children off to bed, he listened to our story, smoking his pipe, nodding quietly.
And what do you propose now, Nicole?
You have fishing boats, Uncle. You know young men who are not afraid. Can't you find one who will take Monsieur Hard and the children across the channel?
I'm quite prepared to pay, you understand.
And what is the price of a man's life, Monsieur?
But, Uncle, they are little children. They must not be left here. Our country is no longer a place for children.
Our country? Our country is no longer our country. You do not know, Nicole. You have not begun to learn what it is to live under the Boche. How do I know I can trust this man?
But I know him, Uncle. I know him very, very well.
How do I know I can trust you?
Oh, but, Uncle...
How do you know you can trust me?
I refuse even to think such a thing.
Under the Boche, child, that is what happens.
As I have said before, I have no wish to involve anyone else in my own personal problems. I shall, of course, leave the house.
No, please. Let me think about it, monsieur. But... Listen. Do you hear? That's a raid on Brest. It's the harbor. They're off to the ships.
Why, those filthy...
No, monsieur. That's a British raid. Those are British planes.
British?
That's it. They're after Hitler. That was the report in Brest today, that he was there inspecting the invasion fleet.
Well, after Mr. Schickelgruber, eh?
Is it a raid?
I should say it is. Those are British planes, Sheila, the RAF.
Our plane?
I've got to get a look at this, by George. Yes, there they are. See? Bang! That's it, boys. Bang! Hit them again. Bang! Bang! By George, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Bang! It was late that night when Nicole's uncle came to my room.
I have found the man and made all the arrangements. His name is Roque, and his boat is at a fishing village just 10 kilometers from here. You and Nicole will meet him tomorrow in a cafe near the docks. Nicole knows the...
Roque! Monsieur Roque!
Nicole! Que diable that voice, eh?
Mon grand père, Monsieur Howard. Monsieur Howard, ne comprends pas le français.
Oh, yes. All right. You have the boat.
The boat? By the Baltimore, the lighthouse. You understand?
Yes.
From the outside of the cafe, you will see the lighthouse. To the right. You understand?
Yes. When do we start?
Now, tonight. The sooner the better. Bonsoir. Bonsoir, Nicole. Bonsoir, Bampere.
Bonsoir, Monsieur Roque. There is the lighthouse, Monsieur. And there is the boat.
Sheila, quiet.
Stop here. Roque.
Here. This way.
Well, I suppose this is goodbye.
Bon voyage, monsieur.
My child, won't you come with us to England?
No, monsieur. I'm not English. I'm French. And you have told me yourself that in times of trouble, you should be in your own country and do what you can to help. This is where I belong. Right here.
But afterward?
Yes. Afterward, I shall come.
Goodbye, my child.
Goodbye, monsieur.
Up there!
Up! Mr. Howard.
Regency, das Boot. Regency, den Mann.
Ja, Leutnant.
They're Germans, soldiers.
Oh, you were leaving us, eh? You are English, yes? Well?
I am English. This young lady is not. She is French.
You will come with me, all of you.
But I tell you,
you
that she...
You will come with me. Ned, isn't it? Here's the under, eh, Leutnant.
The boatman. You are English also?
I am French. Boom, papa, poor self, boss.
Sergeant! Now, monsieur, you will come this way. Please.
Mr. Howard, if we got it, haven't we?
Well, It rather looks that way, Sheila. Oh, Pierre. Pierre.
Les hommes. Les hommes. Les hommes. Les hommes.
In a few moments, Mr. DeMille and our stars will return in Act 3 of The Pied Piper. And now, a tired businessman, a really tired businessman, is being reminded of a promise.
I'm so glad you got home a little early, dear. We promised the Sloanes we'd go with him to that political meeting tonight.
Oh, say, Mary, do we have to go to that? It's been an awful day. I'm fagged out.
Wait and see how you feel after dinner. It's time for a shower if you want one, Jim. I just put fresh towels and soap in the bathroom.
On the road to Mandalay. Oh, boy, this soap sure knows how to lather. Where the flying fishes play and the dogs come to life.
Why, Jim, you're all dressed up. That's a new tie.
Well, we're going out, aren't we? Say, Mary, when do we eat? You know, that shower kind of pepped me up.
I thought it would. A Lux soap bath always does the trick for me.
There's nothing like a refreshing Lux toilet soap bath to cure that all-in, end-of-the-day feeling. And you're sure to make a hit with the menfolk in your family if you put fine white Lux toilet soap in the shower or tub. A man likes the rich, creamy lather, the way it carries away dust and grime in a jiffy. Even in hard water, Lux soap gives quick, abundant lather. Lux, you see, is a quality soap made only of the finest ingredients. But the whole family can enjoy it as a luxurious bath soap because it's thrifty to use. Lux toilet soap is hard milled. It doesn't get mushy or soft. Each smooth white cake can be used to the last thin sliver. Why not put Lux toilet soap on your shopping list tomorrow? And now, Mr. DeMille returns to the microphone.
After the play, we'll have an answer to the burning question of the evening as propounded to Frank Morgan by one of his leading ladies, Margaret O'Brien. It's a little personal, but I think you'll be allowed to listen in. And now, here's the third act of The Pied Piper, starring Frank Morgan as Mr. Howard, Margaret O'Brien as Sheila, and Senior Hasso as Nicole. The land of hope lay just across the channel, a few miles of water between refuge and despair. But Mr. Howard and the children were on the wrong side.
They brought us to a house in the town, the headquarters of the Gestapo. The children and Nicole and Roquet and I. They took us before a major who sat smiling at us from behind his desk.
Very touching, yes. A lovely group of children, mein Herr. Well, I suppose you know that Charandon has been arrested?
I haven't the foggiest idea what you're talking about.
Nor have you ever heard of Major Cochran, I suppose, of Army Intelligence, War Office in London?
No.
Your memory obviously needs freshening. An English gentleman traveling across France with five children anxious only to get home. A pretty and most disarming device.
It happens to be the truth.
Who are these children? Where did you get them?
The two English children belong to friends of mine. The other...
You insist on that absurd story.
You asked for the truth, didn't you?
Yes, I should get it. You see, we know who sent the information to the English of the Führer's visit to the fleet at Brest. We know who caused that raid. You. And Charandon. What we do not know is how that message was passed through to England. That is what you are going to tell us, Mr. Englishman. And as soon as it is told, the pain will stop, not before. Take them away.
This way. I say, one question, please. Did they get him?
Get whom?
Hitler.
Of course not.
Oh, that's too bad. They took us out of the room, and then they brought me alone to another room down the hall and left me. There was a man sitting there.
Soyez comme chez vous.
I'm afraid you have the advantage of me, sir.
No, I'm English, too. Half, at any rate.
English? What are you doing here?
Waiting to be shot.
Oh, you're Charandon.
You've heard of me.
I'm supposed to be mixed up with you in some way. That raid on the ships.
Too bad we didn't get the little beggar.
You mean... you were responsible for that, really?
Why, help, there's no point in denying it now. Only I wish they'd stop throwing innocent people in this room with me on the theory that they're going to convict themselves. Really, I look for better things from you, Major Deason. More ingenious.
I say, are you feeling all right?
Quite. I'm assuming, of course, there's a microphone in this room somewhere.
Oh.
They're listening to us right now. Yeah. You're wasting your time, Major. This man knows nothing about my affairs. But I will tell you this. The English will be back here, and I warn you, they'll not be as gentle as they were after the last war. They'll deal with you this time as they would with vermin. And if you kill this old man, I assure you, you'll be hanged publicly and your body left to rot on the scaffold as a warning to your other murderers.
That ought to hold him. You're a very rash young man.
Oh, I'm in for it anyway. At least I can get a bit of satisfaction out of it.
The major had evidently heard enough. A few minutes later, he sent for me.
They're going a little bored with your friend Chandon.
Really? If I were in your place, I would not dismiss what he says too lightly.
Look out of the window there. A very pleasant garden, isn't it?
Very.
That is where your friend, Mr. Chandon, is going to die in just a few minutes. Unless you decide to help him.
I know nothing whatever of his work or how he went about it. Nor if I knew, would I tell you.
Look, they're bringing him out. You see? The very little thing that I ask. Tell me how he got the information out of France, and I will stop this execution.
I've told you truthfully, I do not know.
You haven't much time. Nobody would ever know. I promise you.
Can't you understand? I know nothing.
As you wish.
Danger, come here.
Just a few seconds now. Are you going to tell me?
Nothing.
Well?
Please.
Too late, I'm afraid.
Fire!
Pity. Come to the window. Wouldn't you like to see what you've done?
Swine. Foul. Filthy swine.
Sit down. You puzzle me, really. If you are a spy, you're at least a very clever one. What did you intend to do with those children?
What?
The children. What did you plan to do with them?
I don't know. I hadn't thought. Send them to America, I suppose.
America? Why America?
Well, I have a married daughter who lives in a district called Long Island. She would have made a home for them until the war was over.
Are you seriously asking me to believe that a woman in America would make a home for five dirty little children that you've picked up?
I'm no longer interested in what you believe. Listen, I'll confess anything you wish if you'll only let them go. And Mademoiselle, too. If you'll do that, I'll confess to anything you say.
It is impossible. I simply do not know what to make of you. I can only say that you must be a very brave man to make such an offer.
No, no, not brave. Just old. The Major was not finished with me yet. The next day I saw him again,
I do not
alone.
Believe one word of your story about these children, particularly about your plan to send them to America.
I'll say anything you wish if you'll only let them go.
What about the Jewish child?
Jewish? Which Jewish child?
The dark one.
Is he Jewish? It didn't occur to me to ask.
But in America, would they accept a Jewish child?
I don't believe that they'd turn down any child. Even a German.
Even a German? Are you positive of that?
Yes.
Mr. Hubbard, how would you like to continue your trip to England?
Not without the children.
And Mademoiselle?
No, she wants to stay here in France.
But if I were to let you go to England with the children, would you be grateful enough to do me a small service?
That would depend on what it was.
There's a certain person to be taken to America. I do not want to advertise her journey, but...
If you think for one second that I would introduce a German agent into America, you're even a greater fool than I
she
thought you
were.
She can
hardly act as an agent. She's only 5 years old.
Five?
Yeah. Now, listen carefully. This little girl is my niece. Her father, my younger brother, is dead. Her mother, we learned later, is not wholly Aryan. So we were compelled to dispose of her. But the unfortunate problem of the child remains. Half Aryan, half Jewish. She happens to be a sweet child, and I would feel better if she were with my older brother in the United States. He is an American citizen.
She would be safer, you mean?
As you wish. His name is Rupert Deason. He now has a business, a grocery, in a city named Rochester in New York State.
City?
The city of Rochester, New York.
Are you positive?
Of course I'm positive. What are you talking about? Have you not ever heard of it?
Oh, yes, yes, certainly I've heard of it.
His address is 600 North 3rd Street. And that is where I want her to go. Meanwhile, Mademoiselle may return to her home in shock.
And no harm will come to her.
Not unless you are foolish enough to tell anyone this arrangement.
Very well. I should be very glad to take the child and see that she's delivered to her uncle.
What is your address in London? I shall send for you when we arrive there.
42 Curzon Street. Yours, I assume, will be a cell in the Tower of London. We were released that night, all of us.
Roque had the boat ready, and we stood lined up on the deck waiting for the little girl we were to take with us. She arrived with the Major, a tiny child carrying a doll in her arms.
Oh, this must be Anna. How do you do, Anna?
How do you do, Anna?
Hail Hitler.
Children, children, stop it. Stop it immediately. Major Disney, hadn't you better explain to Anna that from now on that salute will be out of place?
Very well. Anna, von nun an brauchst du nicht mehr Heil Hitler zu sagen. Du kommst in Menschen, die das nicht verstehen.
Nicht mehr? Gut, gut.
Get aboard. I want to see you get away. All of you, get aboard.
Goodbye, Nicole.
Goodbye.
All of this I know you have done for my boy. And for him, I thank you.
Some for him. Some for you, too. You know, once I thought there could never be another man as fine and as brave as your son. But I was wrong. And it wasn't all for you, either. It was for the children. Somehow they represent hope. Hope for the future. You are the past. I'm the present. And they are the future. So we must take very, very good care of them.
I have not all night, please.
Au revoir, my dear. You'll come to see me when it's all over, and we'll talk about John.
Oh, yes.
One more thing. The Englishman.
Yes.
There must be no trickery. If one word of this appears, it will be the concentration camp, your young lady. Remember that.
And if anything happens to my young lady and I hear of it, this whole story will be in the papers and on the shortwave radio mentioning you by name. And you remember that.
You dare threaten me?
You dared threaten me, didn't you?
Go. That's all.
Au revoir. Good luck and happiness.
Au revoir, Nicole.
Bye.
Well, we're on our way, children. I think you'd all better go below and see if you can't get some sleep.
We have to take off our clothes tonight?
No, you may sleep with them on tonight.
Good night.
Good night, my dear. Good night, little Anna. We're all friends now.
Not here, Howard.
Yeah. Oh, Sheila.
Yes, sir?
There's a little matter I think I ought to clear up with you. You remember our little discussion regarding Rochester?
But yes, Mr. Howard, but I told you.
I know, but it seems that we were both wrong.
Really?
Yes, I happened to be talking it over with a fellow the other night. A fellow knew all about it. It's not a state at all, it's a city. A city in New York State.
Well, now, isn't that peculiar that we both made that mistake?
You're really a very extraordinary girl, Sheila. And I'm very fond of you. And I apologize to you. We reached the English coast the next morning, and in 2 weeks I'd seen them all off to America. That was 4 years ago. I've been in government work since then. I knit. I hear from the children quite often. Just yesterday I had 6 birthday cards. 6 cards in round, childish hand, wishing me joy for the coming year. I wish them joy, too. Joy for the coming year and for all the years that they shall know and I shall not. For this is what we are fighting for, and this is our prayer, that there shall be a future full of years for children of every land and of every creed, that they shall know joy and laughter and a bright new world. Sheila must have gone to considerable trouble in sending me her card. It was postmarked Rochester, New York. Really? An amazing child.
And now our stars, Frank Morgan, Margaret O'Brien, and Senior Hasso, come to the footlights to receive our thanks. And to help answer a question that I'm sure has been on all our minds. Tell me, Frank, are you preparing to lose an election bet?
Election bet? Certainly not. Not honestly. I mean honestly not.
I might report that Mr. Morgan brings to our footlights the most luxurious chin foliage ever seen on the stage of the Lux Radio Theater.
Well, thank you, C.B. I didn't think you'd notice it.
The beard for Mr. Morgan.
What?
What's the beard for, Mr. Morgan?
Well, it's for a picture I'm growing. I mean, I'm making.
I'm surprised you can talk through it.
Talk through it? Why, down on his ranch, Mr. Morgan is one of the best hog callers in the county.
Well, thank you, C.B.
Can you really call hogs, Mr. Morgan?
Miss Hassel and I call hogs. They come running with apples in their mouths, all set for roasting. Would you like to hear me?
Yes.
Look at this week, Mr. Oswego.
What? Quiet, please. You'll miss the delicate inflections. Now. There, I was so convincing, I almost thought I heard the patter of their tiny feet. Do you think you could do it, Margaret?
Well, I'll try.
Oh, yes, go ahead, Margaret, do it.
All right. Suey.
My word, they're coming. Look out, everybody.
You see, Frank, Margaret's quite a versatile actress. She can even go you one better on hog calling.
Can you call hogs, Miss Hassel?
No, Margaret, not in English, only in Swedish.
Ah, but Miss Hassel is a very distinguished actress, Margaret. She's won every award for acting that Sweden offers. And she's appearing now in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture, Seventh Cross.
You know, C.B., George G. Nathan calls Miss Hassel the most attractive new foreign actress in America.
Well, you only have to see the story of Dr. Wassel to know that. You know... You know, one of the reasons for that attractiveness, Frank...
Yeah, I know. Lux soap.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You're very kind. But it is true that I've used Lux toilet soap ever since I came to America.
Same here.
You used it ever since you came to America, Margaret?
Yes, ever since I forgot to wash.
I'm sure, Margaret, that can't be often, judging from the memory you've shown here tonight.
Can you plum up your memory and tell us what's on Lux next Monday night, C.B.?
Now, for next Monday night... Frank, we have one of the most dramatic stories of modern times. The universal screen hit, Magnificent Obsession. And our stars will be Claudette Colbert and Don Ameche. It's a gripping love story in which a man sacrifices himself for a woman and loses her, but in devoting his life to helping others, achieves a final and dramatic happiness.
Sounds like November 13th is a lucky number, C.B. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Your hug calling certainly brought home the bacon. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Don Ameche and Claudette Colbert in Magnificent Obsession. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Here's an important reminder from your local post office. Christmas mailing this year is expected to top the 1943 holiday volume by 25%. So if you want to be sure that your gifts reach their destination on time, mail them during this coming month, no later than December 1st. The Pied Piper was presented through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. This program is broadcast to our fighting forces overseas through cooperation with the Armed Forces Radio Service. And this is your announcer, John N. Kennedy, reminding you to tune in again next Monday night to hear Magnificent Obsession with Claudette Colbert and Don Ameche. Fry.
Grand for cake and pie.
Fry.
Every time you fry.
Fry.
It's the shortening by.
Yes, ma'am. New Spry cakes are lighter, better tasting. Spry pastry is so tender and flaky. Spry fried foods are crispier, so digestible. So be a better cook. Bake and fry with Spry.
Be sure to listen in next Monday night to the Lux Radio Theater presentation of The Magnificent Obsession with Claudette Colbert and Don Ameche. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And suddenly I feel hungry again after hearing the Spry commercial, something yummy and fried. That would do just fine right now. Well, we're staying in the 1944 mode, actually 1 year later, 1945, but World War II-ish, for a program about the military. This is called The Fighting AAF. And the Army Air Force. It's called the Doolittle Flyer.
To keep the peace, to build the future. The new mission of your AAF. the end of war, but not the battle. Peace is no negative thing. It is vital, positive, and precarious. To guard it is a constant vigil. That is the mission of your Army Air Forces. And to bring the American people an authoritative and frank and up-to-the-minute report on the progress of that mission each week is the function of this program, your AAF. Through our on-the-spot reporters at home and abroad, you will hear...
The latest official news on demobilization plans. The story of our occupation air forces direct from your men overseas. The secrets of America's astounding scientific achievements in the air and how they will affect your peacetime future. And tonight, for the first time in the air, the three Doolittle flyers just liberated from a Japanese prison camp.
And each week, the Army Air Forces Orchestra will bring you the best of the top tunes of the day.
He's 9 months and has 48 points. How soon can he come back to me?
I just got drafted in the Air Force last month, and I guess I'm going over. But I haven't any special training. What good will I be overseas?
They say we got pilots that fly without a pilot. Are they kidding? What does that mean?
Sure, we built the biggest Air Force in the world, but now it's all over. What are we going to do with all those planes?
Yes, the people want to know, and they are entitled to the answer. Each week on this program, your AAF will bring you an authoritative report on its continuing operations around the world and its plans for the future. As the spearhead of victory, the Army Air Forces were built by millions of Americans in and out of uniform. As your shield for peace, they still remain truly your AAF. And while the men gather in the corners of the earth to start that long, sweet journey back, their closest link with home is still the radio and music. Music in the form America and they know best. Now the orchestra and Jerome Kearns, All the Things You Are.
Thank you.
1942, in the face of filthy weather, overwhelmingly superior air forces, and the gravest risk of inevitable death or capture, Lieutenant Colonel James Doolittle and his handful of flyers bombed Tokyo. On that raid were Lieutenant Chase J. Nielsen of Hiram, Utah, Lieutenant Robert Height of Earth, Texas, and Sergeant Jacob DeShazer of Madras, Oregon. For 3 years now, listed as missing in action. But with the surrender of Japan, all three were found alive and whole. To meet them as they stepped from a plane at Chungking Airport went AAF combat reporter Captain Howard Sheldon. And now, by Army wire recorder, he brings you the first message home from these survivors of that gallant Doolittle raid over Tokyo. Go ahead, Chungking.
Lieutenant Nielsen, before we ask you one or two questions, is there anyone you'd like to talk to on this wire recorder? Anyone you'd like to deliver a personal message to? I think you've earned the right to break a radio rule here.
Well, sir, I'd certainly like to say hello to my darling wife and my family. It's been a long time I've been away from home, and I'll certainly be glad to get back with them. And back with the rest of you good old American Yankees.
I know they'll be very, very glad to hear that. What's the first thing in the line of food? I know your food hasn't been too good, that you want to obtain when you get back to the States.
One large T-bone steak and a good helping of French fries.
How about the other courses? What do you want with that?
Well, I haven't quite decided yet, but it will be plenty.
I certainly hope you get it. What was your job aboard the B-25, Lieutenant Nielsen?
I was a navigator.
Did you ever have any doubts while you were in prison camp as to the outcome of this scrap?
No, sir, I have never had any doubt because I know the cooperation that the American people have.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant. I'm going to turn the microphone over to AAF reporter Corporal J. Miltner, who will interview the enlisted man of this crew.
Hello, Corporal.
Hello, I'm Sergeant now.
You're a Sergeant now. My error.
It's a long time to... It's a long, hard way to make Sergeant, but I finally made it.
Well, good. Tell me, what was your position on the ship?
Bombardier.
Bombardier. And when you get back to the States, what do you want most of all?
Cheeseburger.
Anything else?
More see my mother.
Well, that's fine. What was your civilian occupation?
Turkey raiser.
A turkey raiser. Do you plan to go back to that when you get back in the States?
No. I guess I'll go back to preaching now.
Oh, I see. Well, tell me, is there anything that you want to say to your family? We're breaking all rules of radio, but I think it's very appropriate at this time that you come out and say what you feel toward your family, wife, or sweetheart. So go right ahead.
Well, Mother, I'm sure glad I'm alive, and I suppose you are, too.
Well, thank you very much, Sergeant. And now back to Captain Sheldon.
Our next interviewee is Lieutenant Robert L. Height of Earth, Texas. And when did you first hear the news of Japan's surrender, Lieutenant Height?
I first heard the news of the surrender on the 15th day of August.
Where were you at the time?
I was in Peking, sir.
Did the Japanese advise you of that?
Yes.
They came into your cell and told you? Is that how they did it?
They took us out to take a shower, and they said, well, today the war is over.
And needless to say, you were very, very happy. Now, Lieutenant, I want you to go ahead and talk to whomever you wish. Just say it right into this microphone, and we hope that they catch it over the radio back in the States. Go ahead.
Hello, Yankees. Hello, Mother and loving family. I'm coming home.
That was the first radio message home from three survivors of the Doolittle raid, picked up by Army wire recorder in Chungking. But while that wire recorder was being rushed by bomber pouch halfway around the world, the silver wings of the Air Transport Command were hurrying these men home to America. And at a microphone in Washington tonight is Lieutenant, now Captain, Robert Height, home at last. Go ahead, Captain Height.
I don't know how to put into words what I want to say. I'm still pretty confused. Mainly, I'm home. I don't think anyone could tell you how that feels to me, or to Captain Nielsen and Sergeant DeShazer. We'd like to thank America for remembering us, and we thank God that we are alive today. I don't know what we expected America to look like, but it was a surprise. She hadn't changed at all, and that was good. A fellow doesn't get too much news in a prison camp, and in these last few days we've been sort of catching up. Jet planes, atomic bombs, rocket guns, real Buck Rogers stuff. If there should ever be a next time, America may not stay the same. If we need planes, if we need money for research, if we need men and training, they've got to be there, in case. Because take it from three guys who spent 3 years thinking maybe they never would see her again. America is a pretty wonderful place.
Thank you, Captain Height. This is your AAF. Join us next week for a half hour of music by the AAF Orchestra and singing voices, first-hand news of your men in the service, and authoritative reports of our continuing operations to keep the peace, to build the future, the mission of your AAF.
Here's a bulletin from our New York newsroom, San Diego, California. Vice Admiral John Sidney McCain, 61, commander of the famous Navy Task Force 38, died of a heart attack at his home in nearby Coronado tonight. This bulletin was from our New York newsroom. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The President of the United States sent a message to the Congress in which he outlined the program which he feels must be adopted to meet the problems of peace. Tonight, Mr. John W. Snyder, Director of the Office of War Mobilization and Reconversion, will discuss from Washington the President's message and the problems of reconversion. Mr. John W. Snyder.
Good evening. We have now begun to work towards the goals for which we fought the war. The enemy would have destroyed our way of living if he could. Fortunately, we have destroyed the enemy. We have proven the strength of the democratic system. Now we can get on with our job of building a greater America with greater opportunities for everyone. We're all working on that job. The Congress has cut short its well-earned vacation to put into force a strong legislative program that will speed the transition from war to peace. Today, President Truman has laid his recommendations before the Congress. Some of the legislation recommended is intended to meet the immediate needs of our economy. Some of it has a longer range view. Every one of us should know as much as possible about the job ahead. It is no harder than the task we have just completed victoriously. But it will not be an easy job. Nevertheless, we enter upon this new task with complete confidence. We have proven our strength in a production battle such as the world has never seen before. We know that we can build a greater and more prosperous America for every American. When we set out to win the war, we took an inventory of our resources. We looked at the job that had to be done, and then we expanded and developed those resources to do the job. That was our national grand strategy. I think we may say, and with appropriate pride, that it was well done. Now we are working out a strategy of equal or greater importance to achieve an enduring and widespread prosperity. Our resources are largely the same with which we won the war. They are the largest production plant in the world. They are the know-how of business, the management that ran those plants. They are the energy and the initiative and the vigor of all our workers, of all our people. This will be increased now because millions of men and women are coming back from the armed forces. They are coming back with eagerness for this new task. It is the one thing they have been thinking about throughout the years of the war, getting home again and becoming once more a working and producing part of the growing America they love. Our resources, therefore, are considerable. We know that we can and will expand them if they're needed. But what is the job we have to do? Briefly, we have to close out our wartime business and speed up on all peacetime activities. Closing out wartime business is complicated, but the steps that have to be taken are largely a matter of using everyday procedures of the business world. Suppose we take a look at how the job is going along. The first step in closing out wartime business is for the government to cancel its contracts for war goods. We have cut our munitions production 60% below the July level. In December, the cut will rise to 80%. The rest is needed to take care of our troops overseas, occupying enemy countries, and here at home. That's a good start. The next step is to settle up accounts with businessmen on the canceled contract. The government intends to complete settlement of terminated contracts within a year. Present performance indicates that this can be accomplished if business will do its part by filing claims promptly. A third step is to clear war factories of government-owned machinery and the odds and ends of war production. This has to be done so that the factories can be retooled quickly for peacetime production. The government is required by law to clear plants within 60 days after a manufacturer requests it. So far, the government has met this schedule very well. So much for closing out war business. Now suppose we look at some of the steps for expanding peacetime production. First of all, the men and women who produce the goods for war have to be free to return to peacetime jobs and peacetime production. Within 10 days after Japan surrendered, 2,700,000 men and women had been released from war work. Of these, 900,000 immediately were shifted to other jobs within the same plant. Within the next 6 or 8 weeks, another 1.5 to 2 million workers are expected to be released. This is a great many, and they will be further augmented by releases from the armed service. Within 10 months, the Army plans to discharge approximately 6 million, and the Navy, 2,800,000. Obviously, our economy as a whole will have to be operating at high speed before all these workers can be put back to work. For some, the wait will be brief. For others, it will be longer. In his message today, the President recommended to Congress that the United States Employment Service continue for the present to operate as a national chain of offices until the shift of war workers and veterans to peacetime jobs is safely made. These offices are important in helping to bring jobs and job hunters together quickly. Only by filling all jobs and filling them as quickly as they become vacant can we be really sure that we will move swiftly through the transition to peace. The second step in speeding up peacetime activities falls into two parts. One of these is a swift release of materials formerly needed for war. This is being accomplished by cancellation of war contracts which formerly used those materials, and by the action of the War Production Board in removing a great many of its wartime controls so that the economy can operate freely. The second part of this step calls for parallel and concerted action by various agencies of the government to increase production under the guidance of my office and the Office of Economic Stabilization. Responsibility for speeding reconversion of factories and for assuring the widest possible distribution of materials which remain scarce with the War Production Board. It has retained a few very important controls to accomplish this. The War Production Board also has given special assistance to small business and has set up machinery so that it can swiftly find and break any production bottlenecks that develop. Price and rent ceilings remain the responsibility of the Office of Price Administration and the Secretary of Agriculture. These agencies will protect the consumer everywhere against undue increases. At the same time, they must adjust price ceilings which threaten to slow up reconversion. Prices already have been set on many products which have been off the market during the war years. For consumers, these prices are close to the 1942 level. Ceilings on other articles will be established on the same principles of fairness, both to the consumer and to business. Wage adjustment is the responsibility of the National War Labor Board, which has been authorized to increase wages where low pay would interfere with reconversion, or would prevent expansion for production, giving full consideration to price ceiling control. Wage increases, like the adjustment of price ceiling, must be watched closely to prevent inflation. The stabilization of our price and cost structure is most important to the expansion of industry, and is equally important to every individual citizen. Until enough goods are being manufactured to meet the demands of those who want to buy, the government must hold the line against inflation on those articles that remain scarce. At the same time, it must make sure that the national income continues high for the sake of the country's future prosperity. Stabilization is a many-sided problem. There is a great deal of money in circulation, while many of the commodities that people want to buy still are not available for a while. There is a big demand for goods generally, and that is good. But rental and price ceilings must be kept in force for the time being wherever the supply does not approach a balance with the demand. This is for the protection of buyers everywhere, who must make their income cover the things they wish to buy. It is also for the protection of business, which must be sure its cost, and which would be equally damaged by runaway prices. There will also be pressures towards deflation. Unemployment, even though temporary, will be one of these. Because these factors reduce the purchasing power of the people, they tend to have a depressing influence upon our entire economy. Some parts of the country will feel the effect of this more than others, but if allowed to continue, all of us would feel it. To combat this threat of deflation, as well as to meet the human needs of the workers, the President today recommended that the Congress broaden the government's policy on benefits for the unemployed. This would be done by authorizing federal supplements to the payments made to the unemployed in the various states, and by increasing the duration of these payments. Also by extending unemployment benefits to workers who are not protected now. The President further recommended revision of the Fair Labor Standards Act to provide higher minimum wage. There is a third major step in the drive to change over our economy swiftly from war to peacetime prosperity. It concerns financing. The government already has machinery in operation to cooperate with commercial banks by guaranteeing loans for reconversion of plants and on canceled contracts pending settlement. The government also will assist in making business loans to veterans and to businessmen. In addition, the President recommended to Congress that Congress revise taxes to encourage the expansion of business. These are some of the main steps our nation is taking in order to win for us an enduring and stable prosperity. The President has outlined other parts of our grand strategy, but I cannot, in this brief time, discuss all of them. But I do want to mention a few. The President has endorsed legislation that would recognize full employment as the economic goal of our country. He has recommended appropriations for state aid roads, for planning public works for the future, and for resuming slum clearance in cooperation with local governments and private industry. For agriculture, the President has requested the continuation of the price support and crop insurance program, and the stimulation of export trade. Special assistance has been recommended for small business. These acts by the Congress and the operation of the executive agency under the leadership of President Truman provide the framework in which the government will work for the speedy transition to peacetime production. We are going ahead. We're going to build a greater America with greater opportunities for every American. There is no mystery about the way this will be done. We, every man and woman of us, will do this job in the same way that we won the war. We will apply to it every human and material resource of the nation. We have made a good beginning, but we must continue to appraise the situation realistically. So far, we have only begun the task of changing our economy from war to peacetime prosperity. I know that some of us feel that after the long grind of the war, we would like to take things a little easy for a while. I wish this were possible. However, it is no more possible now than it would have been possible to win the war if our armies had stopped at the German border or we had quit fighting at Iwo Jima. We have to keep pushing day by day to get the machinery of production rolling and to build the great America we all want. Yes, we have made a good start, but we shall need the combined efforts of all of us to finish the job. The government will do its full share, mindful of the interests of the whole people, it will assist each group to do its part in bringing the nation from war to an enduring and prosperous peace.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, today the President of the United States sent a message to Congress in which he outlined the program which he feels must be adopted to meet the problems of peace. And this evening from Washington, D.C., we've had the pleasure of listening to Mr. John W. Snyder, Director of the Office of War Mobilization and Reconversion, discussing the President's message to Congress on the problems of peace. Mr. Snyder spoke to you from the studios of WMAL in Washington, D.C. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
It's that music again, which means that's it for this week, and we're back next week with more great old-time radio. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.